plenty of highs and lows in the life of Ken Stabler, and Bleacher Report columnist Mike Freeman has featured it all in a new book entitled Snake. Stabler spent most of his NFL career quarterbacking the Oakland Raiders and made the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2016 after far too long a wait. Unfortunately, it was a posthumous induction as he passed away last year at age 69. Mike, I wanted to first get your thoughts on the recent news of the Hall of Fame not providing his family with the jacket and ring that it would normally give living inductees. It strikes me as incredible short-sightedness on the Hall of Fame's part.
Yeah, I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, frankly. It's just completely idiotic, it's stupid, petty, and I know, how do you really feel, Mike? But it makes no sense, and the Hall's basic, their response is basically, this is the way we've always done it, which makes no sense. You can change things. And I know that they're concerned about people selling stuff, but teams give Super Bowl rings and you don't say, I'm concerned a player's going to sell it, even though some players, unfortunately, have sold their rings. So that's not how you should think. And because it took so long wrongly for Stabler to get in, I think that's a consideration that the Hall should really consider and change. It just doesn't make sense. And good for Snake's daughter, Kendra, to raise this issue. She's just like her dad, very smart, fiery, and doesn't take any crap. And good for her, because it's just mind-boggling. And at a time when the NFL could use good publicity, with all the really crazy things that are happening in the league and are going on in the league, like this was an easy decision to me. It was easy. You know, you change whatever rule you have and you adapt and you do something that's smart, but in typical NFL fashion recently, they just screwed this whole thing up. So it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, everyone from Jack Del Rio to Tom Hanks has spoken out in favor of him getting that, the family getting the jacket and the ring, and I certainly side with them and you as well. Ultimately, why do you think the Hall of Fame voters left him out for so long? I mean, was it too much examination on his statistics, which don't jump out at you, or was it his unabashed off-the-field habits, or a combination of both?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think there's a group of Hall of Fame voters, a small group, and I know a lot of those guys, they're great professionals, they do their jobs well, they're great journalists, but I think there is sort of this old school bias that if you don't go to bed at 10 o'clock at night and study your playbook falling asleep and eat perfectly and behave perfectly, you're not doing your job, which is stupid because, first of all, there's a lot of sports writers who party more than anybody in the world. And second of all, Stabler was just one of these unique guys, like a lot of guys from that generation, actually, that figured this sport is so brutal and it could end at any time. I'm going to enjoy the ride along the way. And those two things, his enjoyment of life, did not conflict with the kind of professional he was on the field. They didn't intertwine. He was able to really, almost all the time, do his job at the highest level, even if he stayed out all night. It was just how he functioned. It was how he functioned for a long time. So there were writers that just don't like that. They don't like their guys partying. And there was also some criticism of his statistics and the number of interceptions he had. But it was such a different time. Mm-hmm. What defenses could do to offensive players, they could just mug them and hit them, and far harder than anything we're seeing now. So it was a different time. I think some voters didn't take into account those two things, how they really didn't matter. But eventually they did, thankfully.
I spoke recently with fellow author and fellow University of Delaware alum Jeff Perlman on his book about Brett Favre, and I suggested kind of off the cuff that Brett Favre was, in a way, especially on the field, a Ken Stabler for the modern era due to his go for broke style. Would you say that's an appropriate comparison?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Jeff's Favre book is terrific, and Jeff is really the best sports author in the country now, it hands down. He's fantastic. And I would say, I would compare Stable to Favre. I think it's a perfect comparison. There's a little bit of, I've also compared Stable to Aaron Rodgers. There's a little bit of that, too. Just the style. I mean, obviously, Stable was left-handed, but the way they run an offense, the way they physically do the job, they actually kind of look alike. The way they throw the ball, the way they run, the way they look very much alike to me. But in terms of the lifestyle, yeah, Favre was, and Stable were very much like that, very much, very similar. So that's a good comparison. Other people have compared him to Johnny Manziel, which is crazy because Johnny Manziel just wasn't any good. And Stabler's partying with him, Manziel's partying is shame. But he was like Favre, when Favre was on the field, he was a total pro. And then Favre would go out and enjoy himself. So it was kind of the exact same thing.
There he is, fading, looking. He's under the gun. He's tied, he throws. It is.
Oh, he caught it.
Unbelievable.
The Raiders had taken the lead 27-26 when Stabler had to loop the ball up because he was hit as he threw. It looked like he might have been lobbing it into the promised land for Miami. But no, Mike Cohen couldn't get there. Davis got there first, and it was the Raiders' promised land.
Stabler was such a clutch performer, and as we talked about, his statistics don't look great. But his statistics don't stand out as much as his moments. Obviously, there's the Super Bowl 11 victory over the Vikings, the Holy Roller, the playoff-winning drive, and touchdown throw against Miami that kept the Dolphins from winning their third straight title, the Ghost of the Post. Is there one game that you believe defines Ken Stabler for someone who didn't see him play?
Well, I would say I don't know if there's one. The sea of hands is probably the one that a lot of people would define him by, because it was sort of typical him, late in the game, really taking the team on his back, scrambling, playing hard, pushing the envelope, and then making a last-ditch crazy throw through a bunch of defenders and completing it. They would say that defines him. In a lot of ways, I would say one of the things, the play that I think really defines him was, and the game maybe, was everyone knows the Immaculate Reception, but what caused the Immaculate Reception was Stabler.
Yeah.
Stabler ran for off the top of my head, 50 yards, I can't remember, a really long run that scored a touchdown and put the Raiders ahead with just that little bit of time left, and then came the Immaculate Reception. To me, that play defines him as much as any other because it was, again, late in the game, he was so good and so accurate and so dangerous. And it also showed against one of the best defenses we've ever seen in the history of the sport, that he also could just run the ball. He was a very good athlete. He was a top-notch athlete. His knees betrayed him later, but he was a really good athlete, and that play shows his athleticism, his courage, how hard he played, how he never gave up. So there are a lot of plays, but I would probably pick that one.
Yeah, I think he came in, I think he was a backup going into that game. He came in for LaMonica, Daryl LaMonica, in the middle of that game. I remember seeing that play on NFL Films. Stabler's, we touched on this, Stabler's adult life was really a two-act play. Act one was the football career, which included being a playboy, a heavy drinker, a partier. And as you point out, Act Two was the focus he had on his kids and his grandchildren. Was there a point in his life when the light came on and he became more of a family man?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it's as he started to see his daughters grow up. And three daughters, one really, thankfully to her, and I can't thank her enough, Kendra, who helped me with the book, but three daughters, and then came grandkids. And he always appreciated that people love that Snit persona. But as his kids got older and the grandkids got older, he just, that, I mean, I think anyone as a parent knows that the kids change you. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to him. It's just, it was a very simple reason. He didn't want to party anymore while he's raising his girls. He didn't want to be that guy. And he also had a long-time girlfriend, Kim, and he had settled in with her. So it was just a process of just sort of growing up, like a lot of us do, as you get older and as you have kids. And that transformed him. All those things transformed him. Seeing his girls become women, seeing his grandkids become, as you know, his grandkids were there for his induction, and at the very emotional moment where they're kissing the bust, and that changed him. That closeness he had with them, the partying, the going out, just wasn't as satisfying as being a father, a loyal boyfriend, and a loyal grandfather.
You talked about Kendra and how much she helped you with the book, and much of the introduction of the book includes a discussion with her. What kind of cooperation did you get from other family members, former teammates, and coaches?
A lot of the Raiders spoke to me. One of the really sort of surprising interviews was with Al Davis, who for years didn't want to talk to me. Even though I know I had a good relationship with him, he just, you know how Al is. He's just as mercurial. He was always just, he rarely spoke publicly one-on-one with people. It just wasn't the thing he did. And then it was not long after they made up. They had a long-time division. Stable left the Raiders, and it caused a several decades split between the two. They basically didn't talk, and then they completely made up and had this emotional meeting where everything changed. And Al Davis finally decided to sort of tell me about it. It was like a very short interview. He just wanted to say what he had to say, and that was it. But it was very elegant, beautiful what he said. It was how much he loved Stabler and how their connection, how much their reconnection meant to him. So there was a lot of that, he was just adored by his former teammates. A lot of them spoke, his family members spoke to me. I got some really good cooperation.
We'll get back to this interview in just a moment, but first I want to tell you about Audible. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, or MP3 players for listening anytime, anywhere. Just for you, my listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook right now, go to audibletrial.com/profilesinsports. Again, that's audibletrial.com/profilesinsports, all one word, for your free audiobook today. Was there any attempt to curtail his off-the-field shenanigans by either Al Davis or John Madden? I know you mentioned that it was because he won, it really didn't affect his play. Did they feel, Davis especially, that as long as he's winning us games and it's not affecting his play, it's all good?
So the answer is in two parts, and it really focuses on Madden and Al. And Madden, with all of his players, let them be themselves. It was the genius of his coaching. He knew exactly what he had. He knew the players that he had. He knew that they were fun-loving guys. They were expressive guys. And he didn't want to stop that because that helped them become good players. It's the opposite of how a lot of coaches coach now, who want to control every aspect of a player's lives, from what they eat to where they go to what they do. He was different. He had his ground rules. He had things he wanted players to do, but basically he let them be themselves. One of the things that caused the division between Stabler and Al Davis was that Al wanted Stabler to work out more, wanted him to be more physical. And Stabler was like, what I've done so far has worked well for me. I'm going to keep doing it. So there was a little bit of that division between those two, but Madden was the key. Ben was the key for that whole team, in that he let them be themselves. And I think it was a really, rather than being like Don Shula, who was also a tremendous coach, obviously, but Shula was very controlling. And the Madden said, look what I got. I got Kent Stabler. I got all these personalities. I got dudes riding horses into practice. I got craziness. If trying corralling that would be stupid. So I'm going to really sort of let them be themselves as long as they're professionals. And they were always, when the games and practices started, the Raiders were always professional.
One thing I was surprised to read, and I'm going back to his childhood, was that as a kid, he didn't embrace football all that well, and his dad had to pretty much coax him into focusing on the sport.
In high school, he was a tremendous athlete. He was really good at baseball. Could have been easily been a professional baseball player. And also was really good at basketball. So he wasn't crazy about football. And his father said, I'm going to give you this great car that I fixed up if you play football. And he was like, I can get girls. I can go party on my own. This is a no-brainer. So he focused on football at his father's request. And that started the whole path. But along the way, he still did these other sports and was really, really good at them. One of the points I try to make about Stabler, you mentioned, I think, very well and put it very well, that it was his life was sort of a two-act play. In a lot of ways, it was a three-act play, because one of the points I try to get across is he was a vastly underrated player. The reason it took him so long to get the Hall of Fame is because I don't think people, even people who study football for a living like me, I don't think people understand just how good he was and what he meant to the team and how he carried the team a lot of ways. And so that was sort of one of the points I wanted to get across. And the point of telling the story about the car and his dad is that it almost didn't happen. We might be talking about him in a completely different way as a baseball Hall of Famer if that hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how Stabler adjusted or dealt with the racial dynamic from a segregated neighborhood in Alabama as a youngster to the University of Alabama and to a greater extent in the NFL.
He grew up in the hardcore heart of Alabama and during the days of segregation and those things never negatively affected him. He goes to the Raiders eventually. I'll get to Alabama in a second. He goes to the Raiders, and every African-American player just loves him, and they become lifelong friends, particularly with guys like Gene Upshaw, Art Shell, a few other guys. They just thought he was the most open-minded guy that they had known. And that was his legacy, one of his legacies with the Raiders. But at Alabama, when Bear Bryant was experimenting with bringing African-American players on the team, Stabler welcomed them with open arms. And there's a scene described in the book where one of them isn't quite connecting with some of the other white Alabama players, and Stabler goes over to him and talks to him, puts his arm around him, makes him feel at home. And that was kind of how he was. He was just, he was a very open-minded guy about pretty much everything and everybody. And it's just how he was. I can't even say that he was raised that way. I just think that was how he became. It was just he looked around him as he was growing up, and he didn't like what he saw with some of the segregation and the bigotry, and he decided that wasn't how he was going to be. And it was a big part of who he became.
Keeping with the topic of Bear Bryant, considering how free-spirited and carefree he was, it's interesting to find out about his relationship with such a straight-laced and disciplined coach like Paul Bear Bryant. And in fact, Stabler was temporarily kicked off the team for partying and cutting class during his senior season.
He was like Joe Namath. They were pretty much sort of the same guys. And kind of the same thing happened. Bear Bryant had his rules, and Stabler had his way of doing things, and they clashed, and he got suspended indefinitely and then invited back. and the whole thing changed. And Stabler always talked about Bryant with great affection. And Bryant taught him things and taught him ways that at the time, like most people in your teen years and early years, you don't quite understand what they're saying and why it's important. And then later, Stabler would say, especially as he got into the NFL, Stabler understood why Bear Bryant did what he did. So they clashed, but then Stabler always appreciated Bryant, and Bryant always wondered what kind of pro Stabler would be, because he wasn't sure Stabler could follow the rules. But then, of course, Stabler went to the perfect situation, and those two stayed tight for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, you lead perfectly into my next question, the perfect situation. So he has the 28-3-2 record for the Crimson Tide, spends 2 years in the Continental Football League, and then joined the Raiders in 1970. And when he entered the NFL at the time, pro football was, as you state, militaristic, a bland apparatus. Personalities were few and far between. The only, I guess, safe haven, if you will, for someone of Stabler's ilk was the Raiders, a team that embraced rebels and renegades. If he had gone to the Cowboys or the Steelers or just about any other team, it would have been a whole different story.
It would have been a completely different. It would have been interesting to watch. I almost wish that I could go to an alternate universe and see what that was like. Because, you know, a guy like Roger Staubach, for example, comes from the military, goes to a coach who demands things be his way. And it was a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine Stabler playing for Tom Landry. It just wasn't a good match. And like a lot of things we see even today, where it all depends on where you go and who coaches you in the organization, it was obviously the same then. He ended up in a perfect situation for him. He would have been good anywhere, but part of what made Stabler so great was his free thinking. He was very smart. He could pick up any offense. He could make any throw. He could do anything on the football field. But I think part of what made him great was just how easygoing he was. And I don't know if he could have done that anywhere except in Oakland, because they were the same way. Al Davis was the same way. Draft personalities, and you blend them together, and you let them be themselves. So I don't know how that would have worked elsewhere, but he ended up in the perfect place.
Yeah, just as it would have been weird to see Stabler with the Cowboys, it would have been weird to see Staubach with the Raiders during that time, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than the fact that there hasn't been a definitive biography written about him, and I know Stabler himself wrote an autobiography, yes. For you, what drew you to take on a project such as this?
I always wanted to do a book on the 70s. I consider the 70s in the NFL the best era of football we've ever seen. We now know how the toughness and the things they went through and the repercussions of that. We know it was brutal on their bodies, brutal on their minds, on their brains. But it was also the last era of where football was just completely the Wild West, and it was fun. Nothing's not fun now, but it was just less corporate. Players genuinely played for the love of it, and many do now, but money is such a big part of the sport. Conforming is such a big part of the sport, like it was then, but it's different. And originally I was just going to do something on this era that I thought was just the best era of football. And then the more I talked to the Raiders and the more I talked to Stabler, I thought, this guy is incredible. Why has no one really done a book on him, on his life? And over the years, this is really a 20-year labor of love. I got distracted with other stuff, and other things happened, and then suddenly I just said, I'm going to do this. This is what I got to do. And one of my main things was to talk about not just that era, but sort of mention, as I said before, he's vastly underappreciated. It should have never taken that long to get in the Hall of Fame. And that's an indicator to me of how he just was not really appreciated. And I wanted to write a book showing just how good this guy was.
Excellent, Mike. I enjoyed reading the book, and thanks so much for your time. Best of luck with it.
Thank you. It was a great interview. Thank you. Appreciate it.
A great thanks to Mike Freeman for joining the show. His book, once again, is called Snake, The Legendary Life of Ken Stabler. Be sure to download and listen to all episodes of Profiles in Sports on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and most other places you listen to podcasts. You can also follow the show via profilesinsports.com or our Facebook page. And you can follow yours truly, Brian Wright, on Twitter, @BrianWright86.